Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Write Club podcast. I'm Laurel Simmons, your host, and today my co-host is Andrew Signa. Hi, Andrew. Today's guest is Josh Findlay. And Josh, oh my goodness, does he ever know a lot of stuff? He co-owns the Findlay Mortgage Team, and he is so experienced when it comes to multifamily investments. So, Andrew, tell me, in this interview that we did with Josh, what's one thing that you think people really have to listen for?
I think people really need to pay attention to the CMHC products that he's talking about and how he could work with them to execute on multifamily deals.
Yeah, I agree. I think that was really valuable. So before we go to the interview then, everyone, just a reminder that there's lots and lots of content at thewriteclub.com. Go on over, unpack the videos and the podcast and everything else. And now let's go to the interview.
Welcome to the Write Club podcast, where the focus is on helping you, the real estate investor, advance to the next level. And now let's join this week's hosts and share ways for you to customize your life.
Hi, Josh, and welcome to the Write Club podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
We today are talking about multifamily financing and all those kinds of things for real estate investors that, you know, everybody has so many questions, and you are providing a lot of answers. You're providing mortgage broker services, and it's just great to have you on because, hey, I think that the questions that you can answer are really going to be useful for people who are looking for a lot of information about multifamily financing. So let's get started. Let's just talk about acquisition strategies to begin with. So in your experience, what acquisition strategies have proven most effective for multifamily investors in today's market?
Sure. Yeah. You know, first off, thanks for having me. I really appreciate being on today. You know, I love coming on here and just talking about different types of financing, how we can provide value. As you said, decently challenging in the market right now, and there's a lot of questions that need to be answered, and there isn't a ton of places to be able to get those answers. So I appreciate the opportunity to come on and chat with everybody today and maybe shed a little bit of light on some gray areas that people don't know the answers to. So happy to be here. In regards to acquisition strategies, this has really changed, and it continues to change based off of the market. Most of our clients over the last 12 to 18 months really have focused on acquisition of pre-existing underperforming multifamily assets in decent areas, essentially outside of the GTA, something that, you know, like a Hamilton, a Kitchener, a Cambridge, you know, an Oshawa, you know, places that are secondary markets that are seeing a massive push from a population perspective, and they're acquiring these assets and they are increasing the efficiencies of those. So they're going in and they're using, or they were using, bridge financing. You know, you can get this financing with either a mortgage investment corporation or a bank, an alternative bank, and they can provide you that bridge financing. Now, things have changed slightly just due to some rule changes within the CMHC and the exit specifically, but most people were acquiring these properties with short-term bridge capital. And we're starting to see the emergence of that kind of leaving, and we're seeing more risk-averse investment at the moment because we'll get into it, but the rules change with CMHC in regards to being able to restructure your debt within a certain period of time, and it doesn't necessarily make sense to acquire property with very expensive financing if you don't for certain know that you can execute on your investment strategy.
So people are maybe a little jittery. I think that's probably fair to say, right? With the banks, not just the banks, but just the general rules changing, because it's not, the banks don't necessarily make the changes to the rules. They have to follow the guidelines sent by government and all the rest of it, by overseeing bodies. So how do people now, if they want to invest in multifamily, I think that there is a difference, is what we're seeing, that, you know, there's a difference between wealth preservation versus wealth creation, right? So do you see a difference right now with your clients and what they're doing in terms of either creating wealth or just trying to preserve the wealth that they have?
It's interesting. Now, I have the pleasure of having clients who are looking to create wealth. So they love finding the opportunity. And that opportunity is usually ugly. It usually comes in the form of something that needs a lot of work attached to it. So the majority of my clients that I'm helping, we're helping create wealth. There's definitely a gap between the level of risk that somebody's willing to take and the strategy in which they're looking to implement. If you're looking to preserve wealth, obviously, you're probably looking for some sort of turnkey asset, something that is either brand new, very low capital expenditure required, something where you can just rely on a cash flow or the appreciation over a long period of time. Primarily, the clients that we're seeing right now, the climate that we're currently in and probably continue will be in is a very difficult climate to purchase real estate. And it's becoming more challenging every single day with new laws, new rules coming in, new effect, and loan to income possibly becoming a challenge with qualified on the residential side. More clients are becoming informed about the strategies and capital required to acquire real estate. And that specifically is focused on wealth generation at the moment. So you know, the people who are looking to get into the market, who don't have a foothold in the market, they are taking a little bit more risk, but they're focusing on trying to generate that wealth right now.
And I think, too, it's worthwhile mentioning that in this market now, and it has been for a long time, but there is a difference between the smaller units and the smaller number of units and the larger number of units, right, in a property. So for example, if you're looking at 4 or 5 units in a residential property, you might not be have access to the same kind of capital as you would if you were going larger, whether that's 6 units or 56 units. Am I correct in saying that? And if I am or am not, what are some of the things that people have to watch out for when they're going into those larger unit properties?
Yeah, so like residential financing is from 1 to 4 units, and then 5 units and above is commercial financing. Obviously, fundamentally, the cost of debt, something to keep in mind when you're looking to take on a project. We've seen quite a few people get into projects borrowing other people's money and probably being a little bit over leveraged. And, you know, I think the ghosts are echoing in the last 24 months, and people can see that maybe, you know, biting off more than you can chew isn't necessarily something that you should be focusing on right now in a market, especially in Ontario. So keeping that in mind, the larger units are, they reduce your risk essentially. So if you have a player and somebody's looking to increase the efficiency of a building to increase the gross income, the more units you have, the less you need to increase to be able to achieve your desired net operating income. So you essentially reduce your risk on a larger project because you have to increase only a certain percentage of your building. Whereas if you have, let's say, a 5-unit building, for example, you know, if you have to increase all 5, your percentage of success drastically reduces. So it's a game of scale. So you do need to understand that when you do get into these projects, either purchasing correctly with vacancy already at hand, or you know, understanding the capital that may need to be injected at the back end of a project if you can't execute on your strategies is extremely important. You know, most of the shortfalls that we have witnessed in today's market have come from either not planning properly or taking on, you know, too much risk in a market where it wasn't necessarily priced in yet.
Well, okay. What does that mean, though? Too much risk? Because people throw these terms around a lot, and all of a sudden it struck me that, wait a minute, exactly does that mean? It's too much risk. When you're looking at an underwriter looks at this right now, what does too much risk mean?
That is a great question. So too much risk would be, let's say, for example, you purchased a multifamily property on a bridge loan. So for anybody who doesn't know, a bridge loan is a short-term loan that allows you to be able to acquire at a much higher loan to value than what the building would normally qualify for. For example, let's say 75% loan to value of the asset price. Your exit strategy would have been to turn over on a 10 unit building, let's say 8 of them. And let's say you could only turn over 6 at the end of your term of your mortgage. Well, the risk would be that you aren't a strong borrower, that you borrowed all your capital, that be burn rate on the expensive capital you don't have reserves to be able to take care of. You know, you don't have, or you don't, but you don't have like a management experience of an asset class of that type. You know, most banks right now are highly focused on experience and they're focused on liquidity reserves. So if you don't have either of those two, the banks are underwriting the risk as the possibility that this person isn't going to be able to execute on their transaction. And if you can't, then do you have, you know, $100, $200, $300, $500,000 to fall back on to be able to inject or have a larger equity position so we can get you into something that's more stable until you actually execute on the rest of the increased efficiencies of your building? So you know, they're looking for a fallback and they're looking for that experience or that additional credit to be able to get these deals done.
And is it true also that banks, I'm meaning anybody who, any institution that lends money, that they're also putting more emphasis on the relationship that they have with their clients? Is that a fair statement?
Sure, of course. Yeah, no, without a doubt. I think experience and relationship go a long way in this market. I think people who are new to the space, I just need to understand that this game is very small and it may seem like a very large country, but the people who lend money in this country, they all play golf together. They all go to the same country club together and they all know each other. Deals have shelf life and it's a very small community of people. And when you start to discuss certain types of lenders, let's say bridge lenders specific to mid-sized multifamily, and then you even get the list smaller NHA approved lenders who can lend on that type of debt, now you only have a handful of people in the country who can really do that. So relationships are everything. A lot like your relationship with your broker and your realtor, you know, your relationship with your lender will go a long way.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you the question then. NHA, what does that mean?
National Housing Association. So this is a classification that some conventional lenders and non-conventional lenders have. And what I was alluding to at the start of this conversation was CMHC changed some rules. So CMHC, one of their rule changes were that they will not pay out any sort of debt that is not NHA approved debt, meaning anybody who is in the middle of a project who had a private loan on it, CMHC, when they made that change, they said, no longer are we paying out this debt. So that caused some turmoil in the market. People had to refinance into an NHA approved lender. And at that point, the rule also states you need to be with an NHA approved lender for 2 years to be able to refinance into CMHC. So you know, the time frame required also had changed depending on obviously what type of debt you currently had on the property.
That's actually interesting. I do have a question. With that new rule from CMHC, do they grandfather some of those deals, or is it as soon as that's implemented, everybody has to apply?
Yeah, no, they didn't grandfather anything. They said, so we had files that were in the queue for 5 months, you know, waiting for to be processed. And at the time they were completely within the guidelines of CMHC. And then you know, because they decided they were going to do it right there, they put their foot in the sand and they said, this is now how it is. And they canceled the files. And so, you know, you had to find a solution. And it's one of the inherent risks of doing this type of investment is, you know, sometimes the goalposts can change. And if it can, what are your backup strategies? How are you going to pivot? And what does that look like? Now, granted, there are a few options in the market that we were able to use, but it was quite a fundamental shift for quite a few people who acquired with private debt.
Yeah, thinking on their feet is really important since 2023. Threw a curveball for a lot of people and everybody's facing a lot of financial troubles and a lot of people had a lot of hurdles. What are you seeing in like the refinancing of buildings and what kind of products are you working with?
Refinancing? I mean, so a lot of people restructured their debt last year and it's really easy to see who has been in the game quite some time and who is new. The people who have been doing this for quite some time, they understand market cycles. So they were restructuring debt to keep dry powder to be able to deploy in this market. And I think they had the foresight to understand what was coming and they restructured their debt accordingly to be able to deploy because you make all your money on the buy and you can date the rate at the end of the day, right? So most people who have gone through this knew exactly what they were doing.
And that's, you know, we often use that phrase when real estate investors, now you make your money on the buy, right? And people throw that around a lot. I hear it everywhere I go. I'll make your money on the buy. really, when you're looking, especially at multifamily, when somebody says that, what does that mean to you? You got to make your money on the buy.
Sure. Yeah. This market is specifically situated for people who want to make their money on the buy. I think that when you're buying with vacancy that isn't automatically priced into the property, that would be making money on the buy because intrinsically you're buying it as if the unit is already at market. That gives you an automatic lift from where you're purchasing to what it's going to be worth when you finish the project. Buying it with some sort of extremely favorable seller financing, you know, if you're able to achieve some sort of, you know, 80% loan to value VTV at 5%, something that would rival CMHC, you know, there are the ways to be able to make money. If you don't have a carrying cost of 10% on a bridge loan for 2 years, and you can take a 4.5% loan, that's making money on the buy because you don't have that carrying cost over 2 years. So there's a handful of ways you can do it. But when you're in a buyer's market, I mean, I'm sure most people who are listening to this remember what it was like going to make an offer on a property and having 15 other offers and not even having a chance. Like right now is the opportunity to go and connect with people and make those offers. Because legacy owners, you start to take a look at the demographic of people who are selling these properties. They are looking to get out of the game and they're looking to sell off. And they don't have one, they have multiple. So right now, honestly, is where we're seeing a lot of our clients take on their opportunistic capital and purchase these properties.
So you're right. It is kind of an interesting time right now because as you say, you have these legacy owners. And they've had these properties for decades in a lot of cases, right? And they're ready to move on. Maybe their children or grandchildren don't want them. They want out. They want to utilize the capital that's tied up in those properties. I don't know, sail around the world. Why not? Okay. But they want to get rid of it. And yet, so that's on one hand. And on the other hand, you have a lot of investors who are looking for these kinds of properties. And yet, I hear a lot of people say, I can't find anything. So there is a disconnect there. There's a lot of people out there who want to sell properties. And there seems to be a lot of people who want to buy properties, but they're not meeting in the middle. So what do you think the problem is here?
You're not talking to the right people. So when you're looking to purchase multifamily real estate, the majority of it is traded off the market. If it hits the market, odds are, we think, when I see a property on market, I think of one of two things. It's either picked over by every investor who doesn't want it, there's something wrong with it, or the realtor doesn't know what they're doing. No offense to any realtors listening, but like realistically, the demand for these types of assets are so large that if you're a multifamily realtor, you probably have five guys you can call, and out of one of those guys, they're going to give you a firm offer pretty quickly if it's a good deal. So for anyone who's looking for a property, if they can't find one, I just don't think you're having the right conversation with the right people. There are many people who are experts in different locations and different areas that have access to these on and off market opportunities. Just to name a few, I'm in the Kitchener-Waterloo area. Kyle Church, he does a good job. He helps me out with those, as well as Mitch Taylor from the Westside Partners, you know, on and off market opportunities. And these guys live and breathe this kind of stuff. So if you're looking to find a deal and not on the MLS, you want to deal with somebody who does this all day, every day, because they're going to be the people who can bring it to you fast. And the name of the game is speed. So if you are looking at this kind of investment, you need to be able to make a decision very quickly. Because the demand is still so high for these types of things, we're seeing that your conditional period, if you want to be competitive, still needs to be pretty low, or at least have some sort of reputation behind you to be able to acquire these. And because, as you said, relationships mean things. And the people you work with also have those relationships with people who are selling. So they need to vouch for you to be able to get some of these properties.
Okay. All right. So let's say that, we've got buyer and the seller. They've met. There's a deal in the works. But you have to structure the deal. And I know that CMHC offers some really interesting products. So maybe you can talk a little bit about some of the things that people can take advantage, investors can take advantage of through CMHC for multifamily real estate investments.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, so CMHC has become a retail investor buzzword as of the last 12 months. Not because it's, an unbelievable financing, but it came out of a place of necessity for most investors who are purchasing these properties. We had 3.5% commercial rates that has shot up to 7.5%. And when everybody was in the middle of their projects and had to refinance, I think they realized that there wasn't really a viable exit. So CMHC became something that was going to be viable. So CMHC has a handful of different products for different asset classes, but specifically for multifamily real estate, they have the big two that predominantly most people use. It's called Standard, which is like a regular 85% loan to value, 40-year amortization. And then there is MLI Select. And this is probably the one everybody's heard of. It's up to 95% loan to value, 50-year amortization. And this is based off of a point system. You can choose how many points you have. The higher the point you have, the better the insurance flexibilities, meaning the higher the loan to value, the higher amortization and less recourse that CMHC would have on the loan. You know, if you're looking to take on these types of loans, they're not necessarily things to be taken lightly. And they are very serious loans. They are insured. They have an insurance premium that's added on top of the loan. And they do have minimum requirements in regards to experience and net worth that you do need to be made aware of. But if used properly, they do have the ability to help you scale tremendously. But again, there's a handful of nuances involved in regards to either being able to purchase with them, where to purchase with them, how to refinance, what kind of debt can I refinance out of them? And in addition, the underwriting specifically with this type of loan is different than what you would normally have on like a multifamily pro forma. So working with an expert or working with a team of people who have the things needed in place to be able to manage the application process is probably the most important thing you can do if you're looking to take on this type of debt.
Yeah, I know. I went onto the CMHC's website and I looked for the mortgage loan insurance, which is what MLI stands for. But when you look at their webpages, it's actually fairly well laid out because they do explain the point system. And as you go, you know, like if you have so many units that are available for below market rent and climate, environmental processes that you've set up and all the rest of it. So fairly well explained from the point system. I didn't go too deep into it, but I thought, hey, at least it's there. So if someone is interested in finding out more, then go to at least to get a basic understanding, you can go to the CMHC website and just type in MLI Select and up it pops all kinds of information.
Yeah, they do a phenomenal job with outlining the requirements for it. If you do want to get like a fundamental understanding of how it works, there's a handful of depth sheets that you can also download that outline the specifics around the program.
I think so. You probably do want to work with an experienced mortgage broker to go through that process because, you know, there's a lot of ins and outs, aren't there? I mean, it's not straightforward.
I wish it was, but as I said previously, you know, the rules change consistently. I feel like every single day there's something new that's changing or coming down the pipe. And I think it's interesting that, you know, anyone who's looking to take on this type of debt should also probably factor this into your decision-making that we are coming into an election year soon. And, you know, this is a federally backed program. So, you know, what does this mean for each side of the aisle, essentially? Like, how are they going to use this during the election or after the election? I think that both sides are pushing development. You know, affordable housing is a major issue that they're focusing on in this election. And I think it's going to be something that's going to come into conversation. If I was an investor, I would bet on new development. I would bet on that products are going to continue to be available to investors and developers as we see the municipalities echoing the need for increased density. All of these things are going to continue to become the norm for the average retail investor in Canada.
And there's also the, you know, whole effect of elections, on this side of the border and on the other side of the border, right? This is an election year, as you say, we're coming into it. And traditionally, I think governments want to be reelected. Funny how that works, but do you think that, and I know you don't have a crystal ball and I'm not holding your feet to the fire or anything, but I believe that interest rates are going to start to come down just simply because of the politics involved. You think that's a fair assessment?
I think that the majority of Bay Street is pricing in a rate drop this year. I think that it's probably not going to happen sooner. It's probably going to happen later if it happens at all. but we are expecting, or at least Bay Street is pricing in rate drops later on this summer. So unfortunately, I think that the economy does need to be in a little bit more pain before we can drop rates. We're not necessarily there. I mean, I know that everybody who is listening is probably like, I don't know what you're talking about. Pretty painful. But in general, I do think, unfortunately, that the economy is going to bounce back decently quickly. I mean, I have a finger on the pulse of different realtors, different lawyers, and the information coming out right now, just in regards to the amount of volume, the amount of demand for even just home buyers, people who are looking to buy who haven't been able to buy in the last few years. I do think that the money is sitting on the sidelines. And I think that affordability is a challenge. And there's a lot of first-time home buyers, and a lot of people are looking into the market that are just praying that rates come down, and the government knows it. So I think we're stuck in a rock and a hard place where you drop rates, demand increases, values skyrocket again. You don't drop rates, you have to mitigate that inflation. It's a tough call. I wouldn't want to be Tiff, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think the hope is that interest rates do come down. But I think that if they do it and they do it quickly, like some people really want, housing will be unaffordable in this country, which is already kind of the indication right now that, not the average person can just buy a house. The average first-time home buyer is now buying a house between 1 million and 1.2 in Toronto, which is crazy.
Well, I think it echoes, what my firm, what I specifically try to do every single day is, we firmly believe that it's going to become more challenging for the retail investor and the homeowner to purchase real estate. So knowledge and understanding about how do you go about acquiring this kind of stuff and understanding, how does debt work? If the government prints more money, what does that do to affect the asset values of all the assets in the country? What's that correlation? What does that look like? If you guys want to follow, Rockstar, the guys at Rockstar, they talk about that. They talk about money printing. They talk about what does that look like in regards to asset values. If you correlate the two charts, the housing prices and the S&P 500 directly correlate to printing of money. So I'm not going to get too far down the rabbit hole of monetary policy, but
we could be here for a lifetime.
I think it's easy to see where things go. So becoming informed and listening to stuff like this and talking to people who know, who know how to navigate the debt markets, it's going to become more and more needed as the average Canadian looks to purchase a home.
Yeah, and there's so many intricacies. Both if you're buying just for a home to live in for yourself, or you're investing in residential or commercial, and in this case, multi-family commercial properties. We could talk for hours and hours on this and still not cover everything. However, now it is time for the lightning round. And Josh, these are four questions. Andrew and I will each ask you two questions, and they're not difficult questions. It's not a test. Just like to get to know you, Willie.
All right, let's do it.
Andrew, would you like to take the first question?
Yeah, so with the elections coming up this year for U.S. and next year for Canada, what do you think that will do for the exchange rates between the U.S. and Canada, the dollar?
I think that the Canadian dollar is going to continue to lose dominance. Unfortunately, I think that the United States economy as a whole is doing much better than Canada, and we are most likely going to need to cut our rate before them. If that happens, then I think it's going to drastically affect our dollar. Unfortunately, I don't see us gaining any sort of headway from a dollar perspective.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate part. I think the Canadian dollar is going to still creep down, and U.S. is building up good strength. I think they have a couple battles with other countries, but I think Canada's going to decline. So I'm kind of with you on that. On a personal note, what do most people in this industry not know about Josh Finley?
Oh, what do you not know? I really enjoy, I enjoy life, essentially meaning I work at 110%, but I also go and play at 110%. So, I love to go to concerts. I love to travel. I like to do all those things. I think that working hard is great, but also you need to go enjoy it with the people you love. So I'd love to go out and just enjoy things.
Awesome.
Here's a question for you. If you could go back and tell your 18-year-old self something, what would that be?
Buy Bitcoin.
Sorry, that took me back. What's it? Don't know why.
For, For sure. I would tell myself to buy Bitcoin if I was 18. I wouldn't be doing this right now. I love doing this, but I'd be on a yacht somewhere.
Yeah, you could probably buy it, what, at like a dollar? I don't know. Yeah, you're right. Way back when. Andrew?
The last question is yours, Laurel.
Oh, you want me? Okay. So if you could travel anywhere in the world, where would you like to go? Where would you like to visit?
I would love to go to Italy.
Yeah.
Beautiful there in summer. Yeah. Well, I'm heading there this year in summer. So, you know, it's a bucket list place. It's got phenomenal food. It's got pasta. It's got wine. People take siestas. They'd have a little day nap. They just seem to be people who enjoy life, and they take a little bit more time to smell the roses. And it's obviously great living in Canada and doing what we do, but it's a very fast paced life. So I've always wanted to go there and check it out.
All right. That's great.
Been there you won't regret it.
No, you really won't.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Joss. We really appreciate your time and your knowledge, your expertise. I mean, there's just so much, as I said earlier, to cover on this topic, but giving a little bit of insight to listeners about, you know, multifamily investing and some of the things to look out for. And I think for me, the biggest lesson is like work with a professional when you're looking at financing, and have a good power team behind you, because it's not something you could do alone.
Completely agree. The intricacies around purchasing multifamily real estate are far too many to know by yourself. You know, I think that, you know, the acquisition of the property, finding a good realtor who fundamentally knows the area and who could show you a good deal, working with a broker or a bank or a financier who can help you stack different types of capital, essentially meaning, you know, acquisition, stabilization and restructuring and a long-term debt, understanding how those actually work. It's not just getting one mortgage. It's the game plan to execute throughout all different types of capital. And so just having people in your corner to advise you. We call ourselves real estate capital advisors because it's more than just mortgages. We try to advise you on how to get from point A to point B and all the steps in between. So especially in a market like this, it's never been more needed than to have somebody in your corner.
Okay. And just before we go, where can people find you? How can they reach you?
Sure. So my contact information, I'm assuming, will be down below, but you can call me at any time. You can also email me. I do shoot content. If you guys know, we've been shooting content on YouTube for the last 4 years. We teach people how to purchase, develop real estate. It's at the Canadian Real Estate Channel, or you can follow me on Instagram at JFins.
Okay, that's great. Thank you very much, Josh. Until next time, have a great day, a great week, and enjoy your trip to Italy.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, Andrew, Josh really knows his stuff, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah. That's why we try to affiliate our companies with people like that. He's very creative. He's very well known in the industry. And that clearly indicates it through that interview, what he knows and how to work with CMHC products. He's one of the best, and that's for a reason.
All right, everyone. So have a great evening, a great day, a great week. And just before we go, I want to wish everyone to go out there and customize your life. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Right Club podcast, where the focus is on helping all levels of real estate investors advance to the next level and help you customize your life. Be sure to tune in next week at rightclub.com/podcast or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you get a few seconds, please rate the podcast wherever you're listening. It helps the show get noticed by others like you, and we truly appreciate it. And don't forget to subscribe.